From ransomware attacks to supply chain compromises, the Cyber Talks podcast will dive into the world of the latest cyber threats and attacks impacting businesses globally. Join us as we speak with industry leaders and practitioners about the cyber risks impacting their business and how they're addressing these challenges. Cyber Talks is presented by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. To learn how eSentire can help your team reduce your cyber risk and build a more resilient security operation, visit eSentire.com. I'm one of your hosts, Erin McLean, Chief Marketing Officer at eSentire. Well, good morning, Joe. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're excited to have you on eSentire Cyber Talks.
Well, big time thank you for the invite. It's really nice to reconnect with you. Thank you for everything over the years. And it's been a while since we spoke, so it's nice to connect.
It has been a while. So I'm hoping that our listeners are going, Joe Panettiere, I know that guy. But let's make sure that they understand the leadership and the influence that you've had in the cybersecurity space over the years. Joe and his business partners were the original creators of many media properties that continue on to this day. He's had some very, very successful ventures in Channel E2E, in MSSP Alert, in After9's Media. And after some successful exits from those organizations, which continue under the umbrella of Cyber Risk Alliance today, he's got some exciting new ventures that we're going to talk a little bit about and continues to keep a pulse in the cybersecurity space. Did I sum that up properly, Joe?
That sounds perfect. Excellent.
All right. Perfect. All right. Now, before we get into what it's like to create evaluative forms in cybersecurity and really be a go-to expert in this space, let's go to the beginning. So you started out your career as a communications intern at IBM.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Hey, yeah. I started in telecommunications. I get it. And I know what incredible training grounds organizations like that can be. So give us a little bit of the why. What grabbed you from the beginning in the technology space? And why did you start your career with an organization like that?
Well, yeah, thanks for the flashback. And those were good times, actually. They were tough times for IBM, but great times for me. That was the early 1990s. I was, for lack of a better phrase, a failed computer science major, but I still really enjoyed technology, and I still I was always a pretty darn good writer from day one, and the fusion of technology and business and writing always interested me. It's funny, one of my biggest career ambitions was perhaps to land at Business Week as a tech reporter. I never achieved that dream, ironically, which is actually a big break because I went on and with a close friend, launched some media brands over that time. But IBM was sort of that training ground to really understand the fusion of business and technology.
What was it about that training ground that helped catapult you? Was it discipline? Was it approach? Was it like, what was it that you really learned in starting your career there?
I think it was, it's almost like there's multiple stepping stones that lead to a bigger springboard of multiple breaks. So I'm mixing all my metaphors, but to give you just a quick recap, I got very fortunate right out of IBM. I somehow landed an interview with Information Week, which at the time was like the journal for IT management and business. It was sort of like the Business Week of the IT market. This is the 1990s. And I worked for the best group of mentors and journalists there were in the IT market at the time. And they trained me to think like a Wall Street Journal and or Business Week reporter, but also to have some technology chops. Like I'm not a guy you'd want programming and developing your business on the IT side, but I knew just enough to be dangerous. So I think that in my early, I tell you, big breaks. By the time I was 24, I interviewed Bill Gates. You know, it was like, and those were just big breaks that the platform of Information Week provided to me. So I'm forever thankful.
Wow. All right. Well, one of the things that we prioritize from a marketing and communications perspective is trying to make cybersecurity digestible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually one of the things you and I first aligned on is how do we take all of these abbreviations and complexity and make it simple for a customer to understand. And so can you give me a little bit about your priorities when it comes to, you're at Information Week, you've been in IBM, you've built your own property. What are your communication priorities when it comes to cybersecurity?
I think my cyber focus and priorities have evolved over the years. You know, in the early days, it was very enterprise focused because I worked for Information Week. By the 2000s, it started to shift to the managed services market. That's really when I discovered MSPs and IT services and small business. And my thesis became, wow, you know, increasingly as cloud proliferates, as mobile proliferates, as SaaS proliferates, IT will be incredibly easy for small businesses to consume. But the bad news is small businesses don't necessarily understand how to set up and manage IT, but they could pay for it at this point. So I knew MSPs would become sort of that focal group, the champions of managing cyber for small biz. So what were my priorities? I think I always wanted to understand the math behind the scenes. You know, whenever a company was raising funds or announcing new products or services, there's a gentleman in the industry. His name is Gary Pica, and he's from True Methods. And Gary is like the ultimate coach of managed services. And he would always say, no matter what it is in IT, it's a math problem. You know, do the finances work? Does the math behind it all work? If you can make the math work, then maybe you have a business here. Maybe your technology solution can work. But I always tried to get back to the numbers, the finances behind everything. And that's become even more important to me now in angel investing and things of that nature.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, we're pushed all the time to demonstrate return on investment, to demonstrate value. And, you know, it's easy to do the fear-mongering angle. And as much as everybody in our space thinks that we've matured beyond fear-mongering, you know, there's a bit of an intangible to how you measure and define risk. And we have to be able, as an organization, as a collective industry, to do a better job of really maturing that and showing our customers, no matter if they're SMB or large scale enterprises, the so what. Here's what you can expect. Here's the level of maturity that you can grow to with our solution, our service. And here's how it changes over time. So yeah. I'm with you on that. I think that's definitely one of the top priorities. As we've seen this maturity, so you talk about going from enterprise to managed services, what are some of the technical ebbs and flows that you've seen? Because I think this space is kind of, you know, I liken it all the time to like fashion that keeps repeating itself. So we're seeing the bell bottoms come back. We're seeing the wide leg jeans come back. Cyber is the same. So what are some of those emerging trends that are not so emerging that are coming back again that you're witnessing?
I love the question because you're right. Everything old is new again in IT with a new innovation wrapper around it, right? Which is wonderful about this industry. But the older I get, the more often I say, I've seen this before in a different market or a different wave, and now it's reshaping in this new wave. You know, I would say the number one trend that has never changed, you know, my thesis. I had this business partner at the time. She's still my best friend, Amy Katz. You know, we've known each other since the late 90s. By the early 2000s, we were building media businesses together. And as part of the thesis for our businesses, one of my true beliefs was everything will be managed. You know, so what does that mean? When it comes to IT, no matter where it is, on-premise, hybrid, cloud, it will be managed. So. The trend there, the thesis is everyone was always concerned that managed services would become commoditized and MSPs, their profit margins would go to zero, et cetera. And I never believed that thesis because I believe in a managed services umbrella where services move in and out of that, where you just continually evolve and add new services that are higher margin and you fade out the old ones. So I think that wave continues, you know, whether it was EDR a few years back is the big wave. It's still big, no doubt, but EDR is a big wave, then MDR being a big wave. And now AI is some sort of next gen of all that with, you know, it's interesting. Everyone's talking about AI and I think they forget that with EDR, well, that was machine learning. That was AI. And so we've all been through this AI journey multiple times. The difference now is I think it's much more consumable. And you know, I'm stealing words here from Microsoft CEO and others who basically, they look back at the internet and the internet wasn't very consumable until the browser came along and everyone was like, oh my gosh, now I can consume the internet. Same thing happened with AI, with generative AI and OpenAI and others, where it's like, now everyone sort of understands now how I can consume this. So it was always there. It was just behind a curtain. Now AI is, the curtain is pulled back and we're all trying to consume it. So you're right. These waves keep reiterating themselves and recurring, but a new one sort of hits the shore in a different way every few years. And obviously we're watching the AI wave closely.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Because I think when we look at it as service providers, you see kind of that traditional MSSP space where we tried to break that down and say you weren't getting the value that you needed from an MSSP because they're, you know, it's an alert factory. It's pick a bad term and throw it at the MSSP and say, that's not what we're doing. You need an MDR provider. They're doing proactive threat hunting. They're doing response. They're actually taking remediation action from you if they're delivering a service outcome that's, you know, what they've promised. But now we're kind of seeing this shift where I would say things that are, you know, typically deemed like an advisory service, like continuous threat exposure management, entity-based threat identification, those things are expected from MDR providers and not always in that very narrow niche of MDR. Right. And so I think what we're seeing is those larger scale managed service providers have focused the niche service. The niche service providers are now expanding again. And it's a really interesting time in the service provider as a service market because we are all starting to expand portfolio. So I would say things like continuous threat exposure management. Obviously, you mentioned proliferation of cloud services, of course, that acceleration is continuing. Identity as a service continuing to kind of reemerge and be more relevant. And the one that I don't think anyone's nailed would be how we are all addressing zero day, zero trust, zero day attack, because it's core to every part of our being an entity as a solution provider. And I think it gets narrowed too often to be like a particular service area.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned all these different waves, right? And at the one hand, it's overwhelming. It can be overwhelming for the CISO, for the CIO, the corporate executive, but also for the service provider, right? It's a lot to digest, but I always break it down to three things, which I think are universally consistent all the time. I shouldn't say all the time, but most times. And now I look at it from, again, not really from a journalist side, where I previously was involved with MSSP Alert. I'm not involved with that anymore, and I, you know, continue to read the site and wish it well. And I'm thankful the site is continuing to do well. But to clarify it from my vantage point, as an angel investor, or when I was a journalist, or as a CISO, break it down into three areas. You know, there's the talent. How much talent is required to address each wave that you just mentioned, right? The second piece of it is how much automation is involved, right? So talent plus automation. And then the third piece of it, or the third leg of the stool is, well, who owns the intellectual property behind that automation? So I think whether it's the service provider, the end customer, or the technology vendor, if you could do a deep dive in each one of those areas, you can really begin to understand who's going to be successful and who isn't. I think the danger right now, or ongoing with each one of the trends you mentioned, is every company can claim to offer those services. The question is, do they have the right talent? Do they have the right automation? And then who owns the intellectual property behind it long-term, which impacts the financial model behind all this and the sustainability and longevity of it all. So sort of a long way of saying the more things change, the more they stay the same, as you pointed out. But with each wave, I would look at those three areas.
So you've talked a little bit, when we think of those three areas, I think I'm going to jump you ahead because I feel like that thinking is what led to the creation of your evaluated framework. When you look at the MSP 501, or you look at, you know, the global 250 ranking that is still leveraged today from MSSP Alert, there is a lot that has to do with the financial stability and the growth of the organizations featured. Right. And I'm assuming it's for that exact last point, is kind of who are you partnering with? And will they be here tomorrow? And do they have the foundation to service you?
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit about what was that like when you and Amy sit down and you go, you know, here's how we should go to market with a framework. Why did you see a need? How did you think about it? And what impact do you think that's had in our space today?
Yeah. I'm smiling because those are good memories. And I'm, you know, for lack of a better term, I'm pretty darn proud of the fact that we built out some of that stuff. And sort of for those who aren't familiar with it, you know, two milestones that you mentioned. First, around the 2008 timeframe, Amy Katz and I launched a site called MSP Mentor, right? And, you know, I had worked at Information Week, which did the annual Information Week 500 list, which sort of ranked corporations on their use of IT. But I was also a fanatic who read, you know, the Fortune 500. I was familiar with the Global 2000. I loved the Inc. 500 and the Inc. 5000. And I started thinking about how would you apply that to the managed services world, but not simply repeat those lists in the managed services world? And it was just so darn obvious that it should be based on recurring revenue. You know, this whole shift, like everyone today is like, oh, ARR, annual recurring revenue, how obvious. Rewind to 2008, it wasn't that obvious. So we built the original MSP 100 in 2008, expanded to 501 around the 2011 timeframe. And it was really about the managed recurring revenue. If we had a shortcoming there, we weren't as familiar with the profitability side. It was tough to get the profit information from the MSPs. But I will tell you, fast forward to present day, if MSPs are interested in profitability information, in addition to the sites that we previously built, there's a company called Service Leadership, and they'll tell you the profitability of MSPs overall, not each individual one, but the market and the breakdown. So that's sort of the MSP 501. And then the top 250 MSSPs, with which MSSP Alert continues to run and is widely read in the market. You know, that was sort of the next iteration where it's like, hey, let's take that MRR, the managed recurring revenue, and apply it to cyber. And so it was just a new wrinkle on that. And it was great to see not only global corporations, the big IT consulting firms, but these emerging fast growth MDR companies such as yours innovate in the market and have sticky relationships that not only drove annual recurring revenue, but the stickiness of that revenue, the loyalty of the customer. So I think customer loyalty is another big thing in terms of that low churn always impressed me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, we find that at eSentire when we talk about word of mouth, when we talk about referral, we talk about positioning and peer-to-peer review sites. Like, that is something we're incredibly proud of. Being the marketer in the room, I'm always saying, like, we're the people's choice in MDR. We're who CISOs or CIOs want to recommend to their peer network. And it's hard to find the right avenues where people are going to trust the data and where they're going to go to a listing or an award and go, oh, they didn't buy that. They didn't, you know, or they bought that. I don't want to believe it. And I always valued that and continue to value it about MSSP Alert and the listings that you guys put out and that Cyber Risk Alliance puts out today, because they're unpaid for. It's not some spend $1,000 and maybe you'll get on a list. It is completely, it's reviewed. There's briefings, there's data gathered and financially validated to make sure that organizations featured are doing the right things and are doing right by their customers. So yeah. It's pretty cool to see it live on in this way.
Yeah. Just to follow up on that, one about Cyber Risk Alliance and then one about you actually. And, you know, I don't want to speak for Cyber Risk Alliance, but I will say for viewers and listeners who may not have known about MSSP Alert prior to this, or may not have known about Cyber Risk Alliance prior to this, go check out Cyber Risk Alliance. They're doing a lot of research beyond MSSP Alert, and they really have their finger on the pulse in terms of market research and developments and the latest trends. So that's part one on Cyber Risk Alliance. Part two on you. You know, the thing we haven't talked about is, you know, I've been talking about trends in terms of the technology, the customer stickiness, the terminology, the finances, but you've been a differentiator, you personally and your team, in terms of the branding and marketing of these services and making them understandable and making them consumable. And I think that's a market differentiator. You know, there's that old cliche that a lot of MSPs, they started by tech people who don't understand branding and marketing. Now, I'm not saying that was the case in your business at all. I'm just saying your business understood very early on the power of brand. And you guys have done a remarkable job building that brand.
Yeah. Well, we have a very special team. So we're very lucky here at eSentire. So thank you for that. I'm going to tell it. And we always joke when we do these recordings, like have places where you say, cut that. Okay, team can cut that part. The polite Canadian in me is like, don't let that stay in there. It's very
You know
nice.
What? Leave it in. I insist. Leave it
in. There you go. Unapologetically, we'll be a little bolder in it. I like it. So with all, you know, I think of having, it's not an award, it's a ranking. There's a list. There's the structure to kind of the evaluation that you've done. My assumption would be then you would become sought after for recommendations. CISOs, CIOs, VPs of IT would be like, what do you think, Joe? Can I get some advice? Can you tell me who I should be working with? Was that part of the cadence that you've had or continue to have in your roles today?
Yeah, you know, I think the cadence has changed a little bit for me. Yes, CISOs still seek me out. MSSPs still seek me out. I'm very quick to defer to MSSP Alert and Cyber Risk Alliance on that, generally speaking. You know, however, I do hear from people about the same questions you asked, these technology waves. I hear from a lot of people who are trying to figure out their next career move. And I think people, you know, one of the reasons I haven't run out of gas in this market is I'm not about the quick hit click headline, which may wind up burning someone. You know, I've always been about relationships. I've always been about one-on-one conversations like this. So if someone tells me, hey, Joe, take this to the grave, I have a question for you, I'll take it to the grave for them. So I think that's why people continue to talk to me. But you know, fast forward to present day, most of the conversations have shifted to a lot of the channel angels and angel investing stuff we're doing there. And also a new audience. I wouldn't say the MSPs and classic MSSPs are reaching out to me, but this newer audience of sustainability-minded partners are reaching out to me just to understand green IT and IT services that are renewable and sustainable.
So Joe, with being so involved in the state of cybersecurity startups and helping guide organizations into where the market's heading, how do you think about it? How are you defining the current state of cybersecurity startups, and what are you seeing from these new players coming into the space?
Yeah. Well, thank you for the question. So to provide some context, I'll tell you what we're up to and then I'll tell you what we'll see. So Channel Angels, again, we've done about 30 early stage investments, mostly seed and maybe Series A. Sometimes we'll do follow on Series B and C, but it's usually seed and Series A, right? And there's three core members, myself, Jeroway Todd, and Kevin Blake, and then there's about 50 overall angels involved. And so what do we see? First, I want to offer, you know, some hope out there to startups who are freaking out. They keep reading stories in the media saying it's a terrible time to build a business, it's a terrible time to raise money. I couldn't disagree more. It's never a bad time to start a business. Let me give you a few examples. IBM was started during a horrible economy. Microsoft was started during a horrible economy. Apple was started during a horrible economy. Don't worry about the economy. Execute on your plan and be reasonable about your plan. I think the big difference right now is we've all read 5 to 7 years worth of media coverage. I wrote some of it myself, talking about unicorns, you know, billion-dollar startup valuations. It's going to be tougher and tougher to build a unicorn, but there's still nothing wrong with building a company that's one-tenth that size, which is $100 million, or 1/100th of that size, which is a $10 million startup company that can go get funding. So my advice is go be humble about your valuation and really think about a faster profit path to profitability. But the overall cyber market, especially with AI coming on now, it's still so fragmented. There's still hundreds of companies out there that haven't quite nailed it. So I think there's plenty of opportunity to come into the market with new cyber tools. We're investing in a few companies here and there. Where we see the biggest opportunity actually is where you sit in the space as a consumer of some of these services. So what I mean by that is you look at a company like eSentire, and So often a big technology company would try to work with a service provider such as you, but they don't quite understand the service provider market. They've built an enterprise solution, but they don't know how to sell to and through a service provider like eCentire. We think the biggest opportunity continues to be building solutions that are easy for MSPs and MDR service providers to consume, because that's a multiplier effect in terms of who can you reach and how quickly. So I think that's the big opportunity, and we're still looking for those.
Well, it's funny. I think as one of the points that I think you're making here too is there are always customers with demand, no matter the economic condition. And so first and foremost, as a startup, think of who is my customer, who is going to buy this solution. And if it's an MSP, if it's an MDR provider, great. But if it's an end user, that's okay too, as long as there is that demand and you keep them top of mind. I think that's something that no matter the economic condition is continuing to service eCentire well by prioritizing our customers. But that's, to me, that's the key to success in this space.
Yeah. Yeah. And one more thought on that. You know, you mentioned both the service provider and the end customer, right? You know, if you look at one of the greatest success stories in modern IT, ServiceNow, you know, why are they successful? Because they have a co-managed platform where the end customer consume it and service providers can consume it. And I think the opportunity is there for more software companies to think that way, to work with an eCentire and engage on that front in a multi-tenant way, in an easily consumable way, but then work with the CISO as well, so that maybe the corporate IT department is also running the software. And now the service provider and the end customer can move forward in a co-managed way and be on the same page. And it's almost like a Rosetta Stone to make sure that everyone's talking the same language on the IT and the risk management.
Yeah, no, you've nailed it. I think our chief channel officer, Bob Layton, is going to be jealous that he wasn't on this conversation, because that's his philosophy on ecosystem, like bringing together, not only selling to and through and enabling through our partner ecosystem, but bringing that end user and having the proximity, the engagement, just the understanding of their needs through a platform like the one that we're able to provide. And so it's really all about that collaboration. And it's kind of actually nice to see it come together in the space through our E3 ecosystem in that way. So sorry, Bob, next time you and Joe can have this conversation, I promise.
Yeah. Well, on the one hand, sorry, Bob, but on the other hand, congratulations, Bob, because it's one of the reasons that your business has been successful is that understanding of the vendor side, the end customer side, and being that Rosetta Stone between all of it, so that everyone's working from the same playbook.
So with all of the evaluations that you've done, I can assume that you're getting asked a lot of questions to help security leaders kind of break through the jargon, break through the complexity of the space, break through all of those emerging trends that are re-emerging that we talked about. So let me ask you, what should a security leader expect or ask of their service provider? What questions should they be asking as they're evaluating who they're going to partner with?
Yeah, you know, I think it comes back to that three-legged stool a little bit, and I'll add some more, I'll add some more context to that. So it's the, if I'm evaluating those services, I want to know about the talent, how much talent you have to deliver those services. I want to know about the automation behind those services. And I want to know who owns that intellectual property ultimately, because so many, and again, this comment is not directed at your business. I'm talking about the overall industry. So many MDR and MSSP providers claim to order X as a service or whatever the technology is, then you're not quite sure behind the curtains whose technology is that? Is it a software vendor's? Is it cloud providers? Is it homegrown by the MSSP or MDR provider? Is it open source? You need to know where that technology is coming from and who ultimately owns it long term. And I think the new, I wouldn't say new financial wrinkle. I think the ever more important financial wrinkle is exactly that. Finance. You need to understand the service provider themselves. How are they financed? Did they raise private equity? Are they venture backed? What's their runway? How much money is left? Are they EBITDA positive? Are they able to service their debt? And once you answer those questions for the service provider, you have to ask the service provider about their vendor stack and find out if they're well financed, because you know we're in 2024, valuations are coming way down. A lot of companies are going to run out of money. We're going to see this acceleration of M&A of companies that are running out of cash. And a lot of those deals will be hyped by the media. You know, I was guilty of it myself sometimes as a journalist, and hyping M&A. But sometimes we don't know the numbers behind the M&A, and it's really a fire sale, or it's just like, you know, this company was at its 11th hour. It was about to go out of business, and it just got acquired to save it. So I think you understand the financial situation behind these companies, because you're going to see a lot of movement on the monopoly board in terms of who's buying who survives and who doesn't.
Yeah. And that really, you feel that as a buyer in terms of the customer service, the support that you get, you know, something, you know, the pride of a 24/7 live operation where you're dealing with experts and the caliber of talent that can be attracted to an organization that's thriving versus one that, you know, the fire sale to your point, and where it's a mass exodus and there's new names every week. And there's a lot of questions about what kind of stability that you're going to have from there. Cause at the end of the day, you're looking for an extension of your team, not another problem. So I hear you. I think that makes a lot of sense. I want to jump back to something that you mentioned when we talked about emerging trends. You mentioned generative AI and how that was, you know, really kind of the next evolution of machine learning, and it's been there. But I'm wondering, how confused do you think security leaders are today about Gen AI?
I don't know if the word is confused or is it overwhelmed? Like, where do you even start, right? And, you know, Davos is this week over in Switzerland. Well, I just stated the obvious. Davos is in Switzerland, but the gathering, the Davos event is taking place this week, right? And Sam Altman and OpenAI are over there, and they said word for word, we're going to need a major, major breakthrough in energy in order for AI to meet its promise. So before you even get to the security conversation, there's like this underlying energy conversation. But once you get to the security conversation, again, I think it comes back to those three legs of the stool. Like, okay, so as a security provider or as a service provider or as the end customer, who's the talent that is sort of co-piloting with AI? What's the automation framework? Who's providing that? And who's the underlying technology provider? Because, you know, the thing I'm worried about with generative AI is runaway costs. The same way that when cloud came along and everyone thought they were going to save money, but then they saw their consumption of cloud go through the roof and their expenses go through the roof. Not always, but with some applications. We're going to see that again with AI, and we'll see it to some extent in the security market. So I would be very wary, not only of the technology, but of potential runaway costs with this stuff. I would also watch, you know, we're recording this in mid-January. I think Microsoft's next financial results are due out on January 30th, give or take. I would listen to that earnings call or go get the transcript of that earnings call, because it's a little early to hear what Microsoft says about current day Copilot revenues. But Lord knows on that earnings call, they'll give some vague statements about where they think Azure and OpenAI can go together and where they think Copilot can go. And that'll provide some clues in terms of where the security market can go and scale with this. But you know, I think the biggest problem is being overwhelmed and just slow down and consume some easy to consume information, particularly Microsoft's financial results, publicly available information, plenty of AI information in that. Start there.
Yeah. I feel like security leaders are tasked with kind of two spectrums here. They've got the business efficiency transformation opportunity that their organization is incredibly excited about. And then they've got this big question of control. And how am I going to implement? How am I going to police? How am I going to track? And what does that look like? And then back to your three-legged stool, what is the technology I'm using? What's my service provider using? You know, how mature is the talent that's building, that's supporting this overall AI control, if you will? What does that look like going forward? Like, there are a lot of questions, and I agree with you. I think that there's some major players out there that are leaps and bounds making significant investment in AI. And then I think you've got providers, eSentire included, that are including AI capability and LLM capability within our service today. And we're doing that because we don't believe that this is going to replace people for, you know, the SMB or mid-market organization when it comes to cybersecurity specifically. I think that's a bit of a misnomer to say you're not going to need a 24/7 SOC. You're not going to need that capability because you have an AI tool. So we'll see how that kind of continues to play out. But I agree. I think everybody's got to continue to read, continue to engage, and really ask the question of their service provider of what are you doing when it comes to AI? Where is this model built? What does it look like? And how are you benefiting from automation in my system to make my service more efficient? It's going to be, I think, something that we're all talking about all year long, and yeah. It won't be going away anytime soon.
Just to build on that with one point earlier, you talked about instead of fear mongering, it's really about a risk mitigation conversation. So that's the way cyber should be. And fast forward to this conversation with AI, and your example applies again. You know, so the end customer, the service provider, everyone should be asking, well, what are my new risks with AI? But what are my new opportunities to mitigate risks with AI? And how much of that is automation, and how much of it is people, and how do I marry that? And if you keep coming back to the business conversation, all that overwhelming technology stuff will settle down a little bit. You know, let your best technologists figure out the underlying plumbing for all this, but get to the business need and the business opportunity. Start with that, and you'll find the path forward.
Yeah. Very, very well said. Well, when you talk about business opportunity and the path forward, today, you are involved in a number of different startups and a number of new organizations, particularly that have a focus on sustainable IT. Mm-hmm. And so maybe tell us a little bit about that. One, what is the new world like for Joe Panettiere? And what are some of the organizations that you're working with?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So it's been about a year since I sort of did a reset, a personal reset. You know, I've got a wife and three kids. I was trying to figure out, A, how do I want to spend time? Obviously, wife and three kids first in terms of priority, but there's just no way I could turn off my creative curiosity and content production and all that. So what I did was I was already involved with a group I formed called Channel Angels, which is, it's an angel investment group. And it basically invests in startups that sell to and through MSPs and MSSPs. So Channel Angels has been super fun. We're in 30 investments so far across the IT spectrum. But I needed something to sort of organize and house my overall creative journey. So what I did was two things. First, I formed Mentori Ventures, which is the parent of everything I'll do going forward. And Mentori Ventures is exactly that. It's just designed to mentor not only myself, but other startups that are part of this next wave of what I'm up to. So you got Mentori Ventures. Underneath that, you've got Channel Angels, the angel investor team and group. But the sustainability piece that you mentioned is a new media site owned by Mentori Ventures, and it's called Sustainable Tech Partner. And the whole idea there is, I truly believe the same way that MSPs and MSSPs and VARs and IT consulting firms, you name the type of partner, the way they all got into managed IT services and cyber services, I think they'll all get into managed energy services and circular economy and e-waste reduction and IT asset disposition and things that basically drive down the cost of IT and extend the life of IT, which are all great capitalistic opportunities that we sometimes overlook in the market. So Sustainable Tech Partner, it's been about a 6-month journey so far. I'm really enjoying it. The traffic's doubling roughly every 6 to 8 weeks. And it's been a ball. I'm learning a ton. And the readership, I can't thank enough. Of course, they keep coming back every day. And they seem to bring a new friend every day. So it's been great.
Well, that's what we want to hear, because I think it also demonstrates the commitment that we as a community have to sustainability. And I think it's a shift in combine, you know, converging, if you will, the digital space, the physical space, and obviously sustainability and ESG overall. And we're seeing procurement practices change. We're seeing third-party risk audits in that realm change. We're just seeing expectations change. So kudos to you for continuing to be a leader in this space and taking what is a managed service challenge and kind of shepherding us into the next phase of what this could look like. So I'm excited to see where you take these properties and what we continue to learn together.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And just to clarify, you know, I've always considered myself more of an observer than a leader. And I really enjoy observing these things. And Sustainable Tech Partner will go wherever the readership wants it to go, wherever the industry goes. And, you know, what we'll do is triangulate between all those trends and then point out the big bang trends and make sure the market moves forward based on that. But yeah, I appreciate it. And it's great to catch up with you, no doubt.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for being here. It was great to catch up, and we look forward to having you back on the Centaur Cyber Talks.
Oh, thank you for reconnecting with me, and thank you for everything over the years. You know, it's always been a pleasure to catch up with you.
To learn how eCentaur can help your team reduce your cyber risk and build a more resilient security operation, visit eCentaur.com.